Либо мы начнем вторым вечером.
From the minister.
Okay, that's the only one. Okay, thank you very much. Deputy Minister is here.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to all members of the House and, of course, the delegation from the CETA. Honorable Chair, on behalf of Minister Gwele, I'm just here accompanying the delegation, which is here to make a presentation in relation to the issues that you raised in their last presentation. As we all know that CETA is our delivery arm as the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services, we are committing one thing in this parliament or committee, that working together with them, we are committed in ensuring that we will deliver healthy and efficient government services. It is our responsibility to make sure that we do all the best that we can do. As we are moving digital, it cannot be done if our CETA is not up to scratch. And therefore, everything that they do and we do, we hope that with your advice, we'll be able to be the best that we can be in terms of implementing what Parliament has given us as a mandate. Honorable Chair, with your permission, if you allow me, I would then request CETA, the leader of the delegation, to then introduce the team and then, of course, take us through the presentation as it has been circulated to yourself. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, my Deputy Minister, Zuganovic, the Chairman of the Board. I will allow my colleagues to introduce themselves, who are perhaps most familiar with the members of the committee. CEO.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Deputy Minister. My name is Tumam Happy, CEO of CETA.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Deputy Minister. My name is Andre Taylor, Senior Manager at CETA with the Education Environment.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, Deputy Minister. I'm Sibongile Makoba from Customer Services from CETA.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, Tanya Abraham, CEO for CETA.
Morning, my name is Randa Nuseta. I'm from the GGPS representing the DDG, Mr. Omega Shilembe.
interfere with the meeting that is going on there. I see colleagues are still consulting, but let's have the open remarks of the chairperson. I think that will, you know, give you time to settle. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We have been on this journey for the past 6 months or more. We started last December when we appeared before the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education. And we had made certain undertakings and we're back in January. We had to reorganize the way we do business at CETA for us to be in a position to be able to clear the legacy backlogs in the organization, and I'm satisfied that with the team that we do have, we can't see ourselves going back. As you know, the legacy problems do date back, some of them more than 10 years, if not more, as it were. But we have, I think we've put systems in place that we would not find us in the same position that we have found ourselves. And I'm comfortable to say that before this committee that we are working towards total eradication. I can't say we are there yet, but we are almost there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just go through the President's messages, maybe making some references to our previous statements to the committee, but also the two statements that were made to the Portfolio Committee, I think, on higher education. There's a document here that summarizes those discussions there. Safe to maybe just state that since then, there was an issue about ownership, of overall ownership of the matters as they arise, whether it's system matters or process matters, sometimes data matters, sometimes matters dealing with administration of the exams at the colleges. And while we're dealing with those, the DG has since been convening a weekly meeting that I attend, where we are able to at least solve those matters as they come through on a weekly basis. And what we're presenting today is a result of that new way of working. Along the way, we will still be fixing the structural and systemic issues, but at least we are able to deal with the operational matters.
Chairperson, perhaps it would just help us if Dr. Mohapi could speak right into the microphone. It's very soft.
Okay.
It's difficult to hear what he's saying.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much. So we are not able today to answer questions of what we have done in terms of structural changes, clarifying accountability issues. However, we have solved that problem by going very operational with the DG, convening and attending weekly meetings, 7:30 every Monday. We sit with the entire CETA and the HET operational teams and are able to deal with the outstanding matters. And so today we are presenting the results of that new way of working since we both, or the three parties with the MLOC, were at the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. We'll start first with moving to the page 2 with a summary of both the NCV and NATED. Going back to 2007 November, and covering also the period of November 2016. Previously, when we talked about the backlog, because we only covered up until 2015 November, but we've since included the last exam cycle. We certified for that period 570,000, just over 570,000 certificates in relation to L3, and just over 1.4 million NCV certificates. Then specifically dealing with NCV, we go to the page 4. We note that when we first here in August 2015, with the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, the outstanding certificate records was 236,000. And then on the 22nd of Feb this year, we realized that we had covered even more backlog data, and the number was sitting at 33,297. As of today, that number is 680, with only 16, or in fact, that number 16 has gone down to 5 as of this week. That is 5 outstanding in the system, and the majority of them are pending certification because the college is still Umalusi. And we also have, there's been a reversal in that the majority of colleges at Umalusi are now private colleges because the department takes active steps on state colleges. They, whenever those situations arise, the department clears the areas. So, I mean, the outstanding numbers in relation to system or even data errors, as we're reporting here, was 16, but that number has been reduced to 5. And we continue working on a weekly basis with the department and operationally with Umalusi, who has been very, very helpful in the way it reacts. The last challenge that we have is what we call a completeness test, which is to make sure that we account for each and every person who set for exams and make sure that they have a result, whether the result is a full certificate or a subject certificate or a statement that they have not passed their exams. So that's the last thing that we are doing. And that covers the period from 2007, November to 2016, March. That has been the traditional period of backlog, both the old backlog and what we call the new backlog. And then with respect to the November 2016 exam cycle, we had additional problems, but we did not suffer as much as we could have had we not put the new systems in place. That's on page 5. We previously mentioned that we had an unusually low capture rate of marks, which affected how we applied rules for standardization, where we typically have a requirement for 95% capture rate before subjects at a national level are standardized. And also affected how we do statistical moderation, where we typically have about 85% requirement for mark captures on the subjects at the college level. So in certain cases, particularly with respect to moderation records or even standardization in particular, there was where the capture rate was close to but still below the set minimum, 95%. The standardization was allowed to happen, and adjustments were allowed to be made, even on the lower capture rates. And then when the capture rates got above the threshold, standardization was allowed to happen the second time, but then adjustments were allowed to be made the second time, meaning that there was a difference now between records that were submitted to Umalusi after the first standardization and adjustment and records that were submitted to Umalusi after thereafter. That has been admitted as the second adjustment should not have been made
by admission now by the department. And it has now been admitted as a human error. But it delayed certain process which assess on Malusi. When Umalusi sees changes in marks between resulting and certification, then it rejects those changes. And in particular, when it sees changes in the adjustments or even moderation records, then it does it rejects. We finally find out that, I mean, it's a simple, I mean, these things can be sort of solved through much better coordination, documentation of processes, making sure that there are better controls on operational decisions, such that a decision to standardize on, with a lower, with a capture rate that are lower than the standard capture rates, must be a decision that is probably authorized at a higher level with the proper controls put in place for what happens thereafter. So that deals with the challenge that was experienced there on capture rates. And then there was a new requirement that was put in place for what was called a sub-minimum for the school-based assessments or the school marks. And I mean, that was a new implementation in the system. There were some teething problems, but we were able to solve that. And then the last point here about multiple data sets is in relation to also the result of the decisions that were taken at an operational level when our capture rates were not the same or were lower than at the minimum. I must say that previously an issue like this would not have been visible and would have probably showed up much, much later. And we're only, to be told, able to deal with all of these matters due to our operational, getting operational at a DG, and if the DG is not there, at the DDG level, and providing the support and guidance to the respective teams. Notwithstanding all of that, we have certified just over 80,000 records for the period, and there are about 5,300 outstanding. The table there shows the spread of those outstanding certificates. And with how we do things now, we're quite certain that we'll be able to clear those matters by June, end of June. Lesson learned is we need to put more controls back at the colleges. We need to have a very, very early indicators of when things go wrong. We need to put controls very, very early in the cycle, not just at the exam time, not just when marks come in, but through registration processes, through before people sit down for exams so that we know that they have met the minimum requirements before going into exams. By admission of the colleges, even at the meeting in the 22nd, colleges need more support. Some of them, for example, have admitted that they accepted people to come and sit for exams, even though they knew that they didn't meet the minimum requirements because they were not, or rather they were afraid of unrest and stopping people from writing exams. So, I mean, I think the department there is doing a lot of work to support those colleges. And we are supporting the colleges, I mean, the department as well. We go to the meetings of the different student bodies. The colleagues here were at the meeting and surveyed at the general council, and where we addressed the students and gave them a perspective of how we are going about solving these traditional problems. The supplementary exams, the resulting was completed in April, and certification is scheduled for end of July. Again, much fewer problems, better coordination, but the issue again of low capture rates has still come up. And the issue of candidates sitting for supplementary exams and being allowed to sit for supplementary exams, marks coming through when they did not meet the basic requirements of supplementary exams that we still have. In this case, the basic, for example, a requirement that you sit for supplementary exams only if you have failed the main exams by no more than 5%, but people were allowed to do that. And then lastly, there was a new phenomenon where candidates would sit for a main exam in one center and then a supplementary exam in another center. And the business rules were not very, very clear, and the system wasn't very clear on how to process those. But the problems were fewer. Then narrated, the first part on page 8 is just a description of narrated. But I think on page 9 we need to be able to explain the change. We previously said that the backlog on narrated came early, I think it was in 2016, around August, and we did more investigation. In the presentation that we gave before, where the chairperson has just showed or highlighted that we made some changes, we had we'd given numbers going back to 1991, and the total number there was 46,000. This just goes to show that this is an old problem. We are carriers of bad messages, but we're also solvers, I think, of those messages. Sometimes it's bad to carry a bad message, but it's okay. It's our job. The decision that was made by the DG this week was that we focus on the period of 2015 November moving forward, and then deal with the period prior to that on a case-by-case basis. Not saying that we don't, we forget about the prior periods, but I think it's just to clarify or put a prioritize. So for the period November 2015 to now, the backlog is, of that 46,000, is 4,000 there. Our commitment has always been and continues to be that we'll clear that by the end of June, drawing on all the lessons learned from the NCV. More internally, on page 10, some structural problems, but mostly probably more within CETA at an operational level. We've emphasized the importance of documenting or having standard operating procedures, documenting standard operating procedures, particularly on change control. Because sometimes we are under pressure, there's an exam cycle, and the inclination is to make a request, a change into the IT system over the phone or through our travel ticketing system. And these are big systems, it's an old system, and needs to be handled with care. Any change you make there must be tested first. One must do even a paper exercise to see what impact it has on the base, so that as you try to fix things, you don't break things in there. For a system, I think between the three parties that has been working on an ad hoc basis for quite some time, I found what I consider an easy thing, standard operating procedure, to be quite difficult, I must say. But we are closer to getting to the right way of working, much, much closer than we were before. To the extent that we now, I remember in a meeting the DDG asked and said, okay, now that we know what happened for the November 2016 cycle, will we not repeat? I said, DDG, it is possible, but we have to work on it. Especially we have to have the awareness that it cannot be a matter of pointing fingers and saying the system. The system can only do what human beings tell it to do. If we don't document processes, if we don't work around our operating procedures, the system will underperform. If we don't give it a rule, it will not know what to do when it has an anomaly situation. So we need to be able to analyze every instance, every potential thing that can happen during an exam cycle and tell the system what to do under those circumstances. So we started to accept it. Previously, we had said on the NCV that we had a resource problem. I mean, over the years from 2012 to 2016, we only had a few members. It was Andre, it was Nabisi, and two other people who were working on trying to clear the old backlog. And we said that we built that team, but more importantly, we also created a specific education technical operations team that is now stable and that has been able to do all of this work. And so and we are busy augmenting that with more developers and more technical capacity. And one of the things that we also mentioned quite early, more so in 2015, was because of the way the system was designed, CETA was doing a lot of the operational work, which should have been done by the department. So we're giving the department more and more functionality so that they can do the operational work with more autonomy. And I just suggested now that another part of that is to give the colleges more functionality to be able to do their work. And we also, through our new eGov team, developing now going to page 11, developing more web-based methods for candidates, students to be able to get their data and check themselves through an exam cycle instead of sitting there frustrated and not knowing what their status is. And so we've put up a number of dashboards that I must say can not only are used by the students, but they can also be used by ourselves and the department and Umalusi and any other stakeholder, which allows us also to provide management reports, quite robust management reports, and so on and so forth. We are continuously looking at prioritizing any gaps in the system. We now know a lot more how to control this thing and how to make updates, and we'll continue to do that. As I mentioned also, the standard operating procedures, training manuals, processes, and better coordination. And in conclusion, we reaffirm our commitment to solving this problem once and for all and making sure that it a backlog in the numbers of thousands does not occur after exam cycles. Noting that when we talk about a backlog, it's not a number of times, I mean, there are still irregularities that come up that sometimes show up in numbers because people don't have certificates. But when we talk about a backlog is when somebody does, who should have a result, does not have a result. Whatever that result is, and we're continuously, we're getting closer and closer to perfection here, even on the whole system. Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. And I must say, just to once again reiterate the commitment support of the leadership of the Department of Education and Training, particularly the DG and the DDG in charge of the TVs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Unfortunately, you are the bearer of good and bad news. It means you start the war and you lead the peace processes towards reconciliation. With that presentation, colleagues, can you break for 10 minutes for tea and come back and engage with the presentation, discussions, and questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
colleagues. I think we should start with our meeting to continue. We're at a point where we engaged with the presentation by Sita. Can we start with the discussions? Honorable Suela, Honorable Sheen, Honorable Kiden, Honorable Koronov. Thank you. Ndoyeni, thank you.
Morning, Chair, and everyone. Two things from me. It would seem that CETA has really done remarkably well in reducing or almost eradicating the certificate backlog, which is commendable. But then I have to ask these two questions. You said that the system allowed candidates to be enrolled for supplementary, although they did not meet the sub-minimum pass mark recapture required in the main exam to gain access to the supplementary examination. I would like to know on what basis was that allowed. Is the system being manipulated? The second question, you had to do standardization twice because of a low mark capture rate. Perhaps could you clarify what led to that low mark capture rate and what impact did this have on the resulting and subsequently the certification of the candidates? Thank you, Chair.
Overseer.
Thank you, Chair. My question, I suppose, would be more directed at the Department of Higher Education, who are not here. So, CETA. obviously, this was a classic case of garbage in, garbage out. So what I wanted to know is what capacitation is happening either by CETA or by the Department of Higher Education to make sure that the people who actually at the colleges are actually able to supply accurate information in a timely manner. Because yeah, it seemed to me that is where the major problem is, and how receptive are they to any sort of training interventions that you may be doing, or have they developed training interventions of their own? Thank you.
Okay. I've got enough.
Chairperson, thank you. I just wanted to say this is not only a classic example of garbage in and garbage out, it's also a classic example of government departments blaming each other for things that go wrong, unfortunately. Both Honourable Suela and myself serve in higher education and training, and we have all along believed that the problem lied with CETA. Now, there was obviously a problem initially, because, and I'm very thankful for Dr. Moampi and his team that realized there was a problem, and they in fact appointed a project team to coordinate this. Because you see what happens is, when departments don't resolve the matter between themselves, it is the people that are affected by the services that suffer. So the mere fact that this matter has dragged on since 2007 is actually appalling. It really is. But okay, be that as it may, going forward, can I understand your presentation as far as the rest is concerned? One. Are the systems now compatible? Is the only problem probably capacity at college level? Or and have you resolved the link with Umalusi? Do they also understand that their very late adjustments to marks, etc., it impacts on the flow of things? Because I can recall the issue of the 999 that you had to deal with, that was captured when the marks were not there. So have you now resolved as a group the problem so that we will not see a repeat of this? And sub B of the same question, do you have a dashboard that you would, even after you have resolved the backlog, you would have to monitor this on an ongoing basis to make sure that everything goes according to plan? And then the next question is the systems. We know that you are suffering, you need to update your own systems. You also prefer to write specific programs for departments because that is your speciality. Is there any finances available, funding available for that? Or will you have to, is the system stable enough to continue until we find the necessary money for an update? Or, and I think this is one that you fear, if the technical colleges actually move away from some of the old, outdated curricula, move on to new ones, and you have to create a new system, what would be the period that you would require to plan for that? Chairperson, then just clarity on page, on slide 4, I note that we have private and state center in arrears. Does it mean that those are 656 centers, private centers that are in arrears? And how are we going to resolve that matter? Is there any way forward from the Department of Higher Education? And then lastly, how do you suggest this matter is resolved of a student who moves from one exam center to the next if he or she is unable to write an exam at a particular one? How do you intend should that matter be resolved? Because clearly that is also a matter that should be resolved at college level. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Borano?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just add on this last one? You know, you have said in your presentation that they have written at a specific center, but then they've submitted at another center. Now, who's responsible for that? Was it the colleges? And, you know, how can it happen? You know, that's mind-boggling for me, because obviously it must really, you know, be a strain on the systems. So that is a concern. And then, just to add on also a little bit on Honorable Killian, your IT systems at CETA, is it able to cope as we are sitting here? Are you happy that it will cope? We've all seen what happened to British Airways when the IT systems go. But if there's a change, sudden changes by another department, will you be under strain? And what do you need to make sure that CETA will not collapse if that happens? And then a final question is, who is responsible for the capture? Is it seconded people from CETA sitting at colleges, or is it people working for the colleges, so employers of the colleges that do the capturing, obviously with your assistance? Now, that appears to, for me, to be a challenge, because if you're not capturing correct, I think it was the former minister of honor, the higher education minister, Blayton Smonde, who said that if I enroll, if I pay, and if I write my exams, but I don't get my results, you know, that is the worst thing you can do to any student. And then they are entitled to be in the streets and to be upset. And they should do that then with the support of everyone. Thank you.
Okay, in the absence of any other hand, I also have one question. Something to again today.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe I must say morning, Chairperson. Okay. Based on the targets as highlighted at the Department of Higher Education and Training, APP, on ensuring turnaround of 3 months on the issue of certificate, what is the state of CETA readiness to ensure that this target are achieved from the IT system point of view? Second one. Department of Higher Education and Training highlighted some challenges during the APP for 2017-18 financial year around the human resourcing. How is this affecting CETA performance to deliver on its mandate in issuing out the certificate on time? During the meeting of the 22nd February 2017, Mr. Patel was requested by Portfolio Committee in Higher Education and Training to come up with a plan to train the staff from colleges on the IT system. Has there been any engagement to the Department for CETA to assist with such training? And if not, what can be CETA recommendation to ensure that this exercise is carried out as it is impacting on the whole veil chain of certification? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Given the situation of poor administration in the Department of Higher Education, do you think we have suitably qualified officials or people who failed to perform optimally in other departments and end up being dumped in the Department of Education? How can CETA satisfy itself that people possess legitimate qualifications? The worry is that you keep on, you know, trying to clean up, but it's like a vicious circle. It works against CETA. That today we have progress, the other time when you come, we have something new in as far as these discrepancies are concerned. How can we satisfy ourselves that we have people who are really competent? Thank you.
Supplementaries, I think, on page 6, where we say that a system allowed candidates to be enrolled for supplementary, so they didn't meet the sub-minimum. That functionality is not, or the registration portion and the system that should prevent people from writing exams if they don't meet qualifications is not the system that we're talking about right now. Because the system that we're talking about right now is the one that takes marks and tries to process. However, we should be able to, and we are able to, note when somebody does not meet the minimum requirements. But that's after they've set for the exams. The better way to do it is to assist colleges and have at least one or more systems in the colleges that process a candidate as they come for exams, so that people don't sit for the exams to begin with. Because then the IT system that we're talking about then gets the bad data and it gets overloaded with trying to without the bad data. And this is, this particular intervention is related to a number of questions that have been raised in terms of how are we trying to support colleges through the department
We have developed tools for that, for various parts of the cycle, including registration, including exam sittings. And this is a promise that we made in, I think in 2015, the tools are there. But I think we just got so involved in trying to clean up for every exam cycle that we have not started a formal project to go into colleges and implement that. Remembering that colleges themselves have their own different IT systems, particularly the private colleges, they don't really have to use this one. But we, I mean, the department can probably pass some kind of procedure that says that irrespective of an IT system that you use, there must be one for registration that has this type of protection on data. There must be one used for the exam cycle that has this kind of protection for data. And if you want one that is ready made, here is one that is available from CETA. That's something that we are going to, I mean, we will start with the department in earnest. As we have promised that, but it's kind of outside of the scope of what we're talking about now. But it's normal in this IT system to prevent bad data from coming in. The question is, I mean, why would colleges allow for that if the rules are clear? I can't speculate there. I think we do have some admissions that were part of the 22nd of February. Report on why colleges sometimes they do that. But, I mean, that's where IT comes in to prevent such occurrences. The issue around the capture rate, just to also answer the question of who is responsible for that, is definitely not CETA. It would be the department and the colleges that where you get either the volunteer, people who come in seasonally to assist with their markings. But colleges, I think, have a role to play there. I haven't been around for enough, but this particular low capture rate was quite unique this year. It was quite high. Hence, probably the anxiety then to start making decisions on accepting lower than the minimum threshold in there. But what I know now is that, and the department now takes the burden, because the students are there, they wrote exams, they are supposed to get their results at the beginning of January, and they're supposed to get their certificates 3 months thereafter, at the end of March. But so the department then has a problem to say, if the colleges didn't do their job, what do they do? Because they have to account to the students. So I'm aware of a number of very, very stern letters and new administrative procedures that the department has instituted as part of our weekly meetings that have gone to colleges, where it has been very clear, accountability has been set at the head of the college, that if the capture rate is not good enough, then the head of the college becomes accountable. One is aware of that corresponding to the new controls that have been put in place. One is also aware of the leadership of the department saying that the processing of results must continue, notwithstanding if the colleges don't do the work that they're supposed to do, people, colleges that have done their job should also not suffer, because the impact, as our honourable member says, is just an overall delay in resulting, which then causes an overall delay in certification, which then results in the system ourselves, CETA, Omalusi, certainly the DIP department, then not complying with the regulations of releasing certificates 3 months after the close of exams. Or resulting. So that's the impact. And truth be told, this year, what happened was, I think it was up until the deadline was the certificate deadline was the 4th of April. We allowed marks to come in but the department allowed marks to come in up until the 23rd of March. They were still coming in. And there were still not enough. I think some of them still came in afterwards. But the department has put new controls in there. The capacity of the IT system, we've developed some IT system voluntarily for the department to ensure again that we put the controls at the entry points of where data comes in. Rolling that out at the college is not an easy thing, but we do roll out of IT projects, so it can be done. We just have to, I think, initiate that procedure now, especially before the November cycle start. Doing the training, we can do training, but it requires acceptance by the college in the way that we have all accepted. I mean, looked in the mirror and said we are doing the wrong things. We are pointing fingers at each other, and that's how we've been able, I think, to get to where we are right now. Colleges also have to do that, but that's a very, very complex area there. So, I don't think we'll see a turnaround in the colleges. Even if we were to start training now, I think it's probably a 2-year process. But it has to be started in earnest, not just because it's just a complex people. I don't think the department has full control. I mean, if you have colleges that don't submit marks 3 months after the exam, for them then to be there for training and then to put the controls in, it may not be an easy thing. But we will give it a shot for this year. We definitely, there shouldn't be any problem on capacity on our side. Whatever it takes, we will make sure that it happens from a project point of view. We do accept that there's lots of lessons learned here around how to do things better. The systems are compatible. The procedures and the way we work has not always been compatible. We have not always had our processes mapped out. As I said, it took about 3 weeks ago for an admission to be made in these weekly meetings that there was a human error in making putting the second adjustment on the second set of standardization. It was always that the system produced different moderation records, or moderation records changed between resulting and certification. And it was always a blame on CETA. But by the time we finished about 3 weeks ago, when we mapped out the entire process, it became very, very clear that standardization was called for twice, but nobody called for adjustment to be done twice. Because standardization, so you run the things, you produce a second set of moderation records or adjustments, but it becomes an administrative decision to then apply that adjustment to the marks. And it's done by a human being, not by an IT system. A human being did that. As long as we accept those things and we're able to talk honestly and freely, then the human beings will align and the systems will align once human beings are aligned. And we are much further. We're closer to getting that overall alignment than we were probably even 6 months ago. I think we've highlighted that there's a lot of work that has to be done at the colleges, and one is aware of how the department is doing things differently. And also some of the changes that are the decisions that are made. For example, when marks are not coming in, we have a record there that are outstanding, and then they can be passed to Umalusi in data sets. Later on, we then say in frustration, not ACETA, but a decision is made to change those marks to absent so that we can finish the certification process. But then all of a sudden you have a change of records between outstanding, which are the 777s, and the absent, which is the 999. And all of a sudden, somebody, a student, can get a result that said they were absent in an exam when they knew they were there. And the problem is that the amounts were outstanding. They were never given to the DHET for processing. And when we come and say Umalusi has accepted and Umalusi resisted, that we are not going to start changing that status as a quality assurer, because all of us now have a problem. When, as honourable members, you go on oversight and we say we have cleared the backlog because the 999s are it's a result, and a student now comes in and says, but you can't say I was absent. I know I was there in the exam. And then we have the disconnect. Oftentimes, such decisions are made at a very, very low level operationally. And I think, if I recall well, the DDG has been very, very clear that we don't make those decisions, certainly at an operational level. Such decisions are too important. They have to be made at a much higher level within the department. And it was a big problem in the sex cycle for certainly for NCB and NATED. Such changes there. We're trying to simplify our dashboards also moving forward. I think if honourable members recall our presentations, this is a complex thing. And you know, I always said that when we were doing the NCB backlog before, we had graphs and you could see a graph and so on and so forth going down. But sometimes we revert to talking about the problem and the situation in words, and it becomes a very, very complex thing to understand. So we have dashboards, not only through the team that is the education team, but we are supporting some education team with our new e-government team, which is now developing web-based dashboards that allow us, I mean, to the extent if we can, as we are doing now, be able to say that a customer is a student who, after writing an exam, must know where they are in the process towards certification. Each and every student. Then we have the basic data sets to produce any report, per college, per district, whichever way, even province, whichever way we are required to do so. So our e-government, the new e-government team is working with our education team to produce those dashboards so that we don't have surprises. The current system, I think it is stable. By admission, I think, of the department itself, the department has said that if what they see as a system problem, and we have agreed what kind of problem it is, if we the change, what is seen as differences between results, adjustments, or moderation records after resulting and certification, if those things stay the same, then 90% of what the department sees as system problems will be sorted out. And then we say, okay, fine, if we do that, then let us see what causes such problems. Capture rates, operational decisions that are too important to be made at an operational level. You know, how do we bend forward? How do we bend backwards when, you know, things happen? Let us look at the universe of possibilities of why those things can happen. And then we've accepted that we're going to go that route. And from a stability point of view, then the Department of Admission says that 90% of what they see as problems will be solved. What happens if there's a major change in curriculum and how long it takes? It's a difficult, tricky question. Because as much as we have stabilized and we know how to do change management, the required changes, there's a whole schedule of when required changes are made. And I think we get the changes that are required very early in the year. We have received one for the November cycle. So we're able to implement those if they don't change in between. And we're able to engage with the department if this is such a major change. For example, the sub-minimum, if I recall, was a new requirement this year, teething problems, but we're able to deal with it eventually. Where there are major changes, we'll be able to respond to the department and say, look, it's not a... It doesn't fit the annual kind of change cycle, but our conversations are much better now with them. What we saw on page 9-4 there are, is not colleges, are certificates that are outstanding due to colleges being in areas. We have another data, I don't have the number now, of the number of colleges themselves that I'm responsible for that. The, how do we solve the issue about students, and I think that was asked in different ways, writing main and supplementary different centers. And that's a decision of the department, and to be accepted by Umalusi. Umalusi may have reasons to worry about supplementaries being written in different places to the main exam center. I'm not sure about what they would worry about, but I can imagine one or two things. But should it be, right now I think it's a rule that it has to be written in the same center. But should it be allowed that they can write in different centers for any reason, the system can accommodate that. That's not a problem. But I think one would have to reflect, the business owners and decision makers would have to reflect on why the rule is there in the first place, and what risk mitigation steps should we then put into the system in support of that. I think we've already answered the question of who is responsible for managing where the students write. It's eventually the DHET with Umalusi having a say in it. I think the BA, this collapse of the IT system at BA is a lesson probably in opposite to what this thing is. So the BA outsourced all its IT systems somewhere. In a similar way where we say, CETA is so bad, now let's take it out and outsource it. And the people who were managing and maintaining this thing were far away probably from management. Managing them not directly as our public servants that can be subjected to the parliamentary session like this and so on and so forth. But now they are managed through contracts and commission. And that is exactly what the union there is saying, we told you. So I think a lesson learned there is that when a problem exists, one needs to exhaust internal solutions and not just say that the problem is with a weak CETA state machinery. Lest we get exactly what the issues are and try to solve those issues until we identify real structural problems and put the right solution to the right problem there. There's been an attempt in 2007 to put a new IT system. In fact, the system that we're talking about was implemented in the private sector by private sector developers in between 89 and 91, and then inherited into CETA and then maintained them. In 2007, there was an attempt to go and acquire a new one, and that attempt failed. There's a new attempt to acquire a new system, and we are supporting the department in doing so. But there's no reason for us to try and withhold support on the if the department wanted to explore a new method of doing things. We agree that this thing has to be modernized, and we have our own modernization program. But one has to be very, very careful that this system that is still able to certificate tens of thousands of students every year is not replaced by a system that is not able to certificate even one person. So it still works. It still works. The capture rate, as you said, it's a department, and they've done a lot of work to to performance manage colleges. The 3-month turnaround, we'll work with the department even with more energy. I think now there was an alarm bell, I must say, in December, just before resulting from the department. And I think a lesson learned is that this operational method of managing things, we must always implement, because it can be done. There's nothing stopping us from meeting the 3-month turnaround for certification. But we must identify problems and deal with problems probably faster than we've been dealing with them before. The issue of mark capture rates, it is not something that was a surprise to us in March. We knew way back then, even in December, that the marks capture rate was low, because the capturing of marks into the system should have been completed at the end of December. The minute coming in January, we should have done certain things in much more at the colleges with a lot more force, and we didn't do that. As a team of leaders in the public. From our subsidiary and the department, we could have done more. So we do that, we solve all problems. And in addition to the fact that if we can provide more support with more training to the department towards the colleges, we'll be able to do that on our side. From a CETA perspective, we're going to intensify, as we've made promises there, capacitating our team. We are putting more and more training in it, and not just technical training, but also training on responsiveness. I must say that my conversation with Andre, for example, is very, very different now to what it was in about 18 months ago, because the language is now the same. We understand each other much more, and we are more consistent. Sometimes if I'm not in a meeting, I know I'm not going to get a surprise because we said the wrong things or we responded the wrong way. We will continuously make changes on our side, but provide the support to the department. The HR issues on the CETA side, I'm hearing less and less complaints from the department officials that CETA does not have capacity. Once in a while it comes in, but probably out of frustration of one or two things. There are certain other areas where we still need to improve. For example, our turnaround times when requests come through our support infrastructure, the call center, we can improve our turnaround times there. But we have put IBC to manage that as now a dedicated area. We'll continue to improve our HR methods. But related to the other question, I think from the chair is, what if there are HR matters within the department? Can I say the conversation with the DG a year ago was very, very difficult. He was upset. He was upset at CETA, as he should have been. He would be upset at me, as he should have been. And I was not able to have a discussion with him about potential problems in HR on his side. The conversation is now different. And in those meetings, we can sit, and we do sit as leaders, and we can point out HR problems on either side without feeling like we are protecting them with him. And he knows now, and I think he's accepted now, where there are specific areas, HR areas. Has anything happened there? I probably can't say more, Chair, about that. Safe to say that I'm quite convinced now that there are one or two areas where we've identified where the HR problem is. And the DG knows exactly there. But we don't have control of what how the department gets capacitated. We can do more to support the department with training, as we've promised there. I think once we are done with the supplementaries, I know there are other exam cycles coming up, NATED in August, but I think in between now and August, we'll start the new training program in earnest. in the departments for colleges, particularly on the system that we built to prevent bad data from coming in. The cycle. Vicious cycle, I don't think so. I mean, I think we, to the extent that it's getting smaller and smaller with smaller and smaller problems inside the cycle. I'm certainly, personally, I'm much more comfortable that we have crossed a specific bridge, or we've crossed, I mean, we've gone through a specific bridge. Certainly at a leadership level. One cannot say that they have sorted everything out, but the cycle is getting smaller and smaller, certainly. I mean, I think so.
Any addition? Okay, thank you very much. Members, there is the responses. Do we have follow-up questions? Ms. Kira?
I just wanted to make a comment, Chairperson. I don't think we've actually congratulated CISA. If we think where we were in August 2015 when we inherited this major problem, I think we should really, you know, credit where credit is due, one should give it to the team. I think there was also cooperation from the side of the Department of Higher Education. If I calculate and if my maths don't let me down, I think we are at under 0.3% of certificates outstanding compared to what we started with. However, I just wanted to make the comment from the presentation. It appears that we have a significant problem in the private colleges. Because if you look at it, we've only managed to deal with 50% of outstanding certificates. Chairperson, and that is a matter that Honourable Suella and myself will take up with the department. We cannot allow private colleges to operate and people paying fees for those colleges, and ultimately they don't receive their certificates. I think it is certainly a matter that there must be stricter control by the department, and if necessary, there should be additional regulations, because colleges receive their registration to operate from the department, and if they fail the students, they should lose it. Otherwise, it becomes a money-making exercise and nothing more. So I think that matter needs further investigation, and we will take it up with the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Ombro McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. Just a comment and a small question. You know, I think sometimes in the numbers we forget that behind each one of these there's an individual standing that that is waiting for their certificate, that can't study, that can't enroll for further studies, that can't get a job because they don't have that certificate. So even one is one too many outstanding. In terms of a caseload, I just want to get an idea. What sort of team do you have allocated to each one of these cases? And if it's one person per case, how many cases does that particular person deal with? I'm just trying to get an idea of a workload per person to resolve these queries. Thank you, Chair.
Dr.
Mabi?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members of the meeting. Yeah, at this stage, we've got about six people that's more or less focusing dedicatedly on this issue with regards to the backlog. And in terms of a caseload, it's difficult to get a standard rate for those type of queries that we need. But on average, I would say that we deal with the majority of the cases on a daily or a weekly basis, that it doesn't build up into a new backlog. More or less, what I've seen this past week or so is that we'll get about 5 to 6 new queries in terms of clarifying something on a candidate or looking at some data anomalies on a candidate at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Team CETA, Deputy Minister, we really acknowledge and applaud CETA for progress made in the Operation Cleanup campaign.
We can only pray that, you know, we move incrementally and not regress at some stage. We must make sure that the colleges are strengthened to become institutions of choice for the training of artisans and other mid-level skills. It is important that TB colleges ensure learners who choose to pursue a vocational training career have access to institutions that provide quality vocational education. The key word here is quality of education, and it needs both the teachers and the administration in the department to make sure that we have that quality. And we have this NDP Vision 2030. We must make sure that it becomes a reality. And the issue of ensuring that learners who have passed their modules and courses are issued to certificates on time, that one cannot be overemphasized. It is very crucial. Otherwise, it delays their opportunities to get employment and also to further their studies if they so wish. The kind of graduates we produce because of the quality of education is worrisome. We have a number of unemployed graduates and unemployable graduates because of this situation. And if we look at page 6, or slide 6, the last bullet, it says system allowed candidates to be enrolled for the military although they did not meet set minimum pass mark on the main exam. So it says it all. The reason why we have this high unemployment of young people, it is because of the quality of education, one of the contributing factors, let me so say. This actually opens up to bogus educational institutions with unreasonable high fees, and some of them are not even registered, you know, with the relevant institutions. However, we must also applaud Uma Lucy for putting their foot down to make sure that the processes and quality is not compromised. I think from here, moving on, we'll have the highest level of cooperation from the Department of Education. Otherwise, we'll be fighting a losing battle. With those few words, colleagues, I think we've come to the end of this of the day, but we are left with minutes, and those who want to stay with us for the minutes can stay, those who want to leave can leave. And I just want to make a comment about the venue, Minister. You know, when we have a big, big entourage, we are cramped in that small in our room, but today we have this room. If we can make sure that even next time we have this venue, please. Thank you very much.